Alex, who are you?
I am a scientist turned tech entrepreneur. That's how I would describe myself. That's scientific / playful as a child with new idea mindset taken into tech entrepreneurship world.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this in the past, or people have asked you, like, it almost seems like those are different worlds in a way. I'm curious to understand like kind of what life was like before the entrepreneurial full, like the jump in and how you got to this point of, working at NASA and being a scientist. And like, what was the underlying drive to doing that kind of work?
I always say I have a lot of friends who are still scientists. They don't consider me a scientist anymore because I stopped publishing many years ago. If I am honest with myself, the best period of my life was right before I became an entrepreneur. So like in terms of just fun, enjoying my life, I really loved my life as a curious mind, playing with different ideas in the lab, trying to discover something new. It's something that is very unique to people who are in scientific research, and I can sort of replicate it in entrepreneurship. But not quite. But entrepreneurship has a lot of benefits. Don't get me wrong. There's a reason why I never went back. So it's a hard question. If you ask me, if I go back in time, would I become an entrepreneur? I would say it's a 50-50.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I imagine with just even the, kind of like this, and I'm generalizing, but like the scientific inquiry and the way your mind is trained to ask questions and prove out, a hypothesis and so forth. I mean, is that not what we're doing in the entrepreneurial world in some respects, right?
Well, you are to some extent. That's why I said it's applicable.
Yeah.
But the factors are like, you can't be curious for the sake of being curious when you are in a business. Does that make sense? So otherwise you will end up building things that don't have customers, even though they're new things. So you need to worry about market and revenue and payroll and things like that. So it is, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think people who have that playful, always curious mind, they have an advantage in entrepreneurship, but there's so much more outside of that plays a part, but there's a lot more. So that's positives and negatives. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm hearing is you've got, like anything, I guess you've got to be careful you're not over-indexing on that. Mm-hmm. In this case, the curiosity element, right? Because it can at one point, there's probably a turning point where it can just turn into something that's working against you, right? To your point, like you're building stuff. You've got no business model or customers, and
yes,
yeah. Sure, it's interesting,
yeah,
but it's not sustainable. Alex, you mentioned, I have to go back because I don't want to forget, but you mentioned that you were in a really great, happy place right before, you jumped into the entrepreneur world. So what was that setting?
Research lab, computational sciences division at NASA, and a little over two years. I did a lot of work. Like, I was working as much as I am right now, honestly. Like, I was like, I was an anomaly, but I published a lot of papers, worked on really interesting projects. It was my dream since I was 5 years old. If you ask me, I would have told you that what you want to be, that is what I wanted to be when I was five. So it has its own problems. Don't get me wrong. I mean, working for those very few people in your audience who have probably ever worked in academia or in a research setting, it's just, you have to beg for funding, grants, and peer review research it has its own politics. People don't know this. They think, scientists are all like, oh no, we judge papers based on scientific merit. But no, it's that they're also humans, and it's like they play politics with each other and stuff like that. It's a very different world. It's now almost two decades behind me, but it was also a lot of fun. I could just wake up one morning, I'm like, what if I play this experiment? And I would run to the lab and we would simulate whatever we were doing, and most of the time it will fail. It's actually kind of like entrepreneurship. It's like you come up with a hypothesis, you go play, and it's like, it doesn't work. And then 2 weeks later in the shower, another idea hits you. You're like, how about this? And then you go try it. So it was very interesting. It was, Yeah, it's like, but it doesn't, I don't want to dive too much into it because it's probably relevant to very few people in your audience, but it has a lot of drawbacks too. You don't control your own destiny as a scientist, stuff like that. So,
sure. So then what questions were coming up in your mind that sparked a departure from that world?
It wasn't a question. It wasn't like I applied my research to my work. It was more like I lived in Silicon Valley at the time. I lived in Mountain View. That's where Google is. And it's next to Palo Alto, Stanford. I started making friends who were tech entrepreneurs. And when something like that happens, I want to say it was influence from osmosis from the environment. Essentially,
that makes sense, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you start thinking, what if? Should I try? It's like another thing you want to try. And I don't come from a business background. When I was growing up, I never thought I would be an entrepreneur. My parents were academic. So it's like they were like research, education, degrees. That's how I grew up.
Yeah.
So it was like, what if, and it's also glorified. Entrepreneurship is glorified in Silicon Valley. So I was like, I got to try it. And once you cross that Rubicon and you get addicted to the freedom to succeed or fail that entrepreneurship gives you, that freedom is not replicable in any other job, position, career, I would say. So entrepreneurship gives you like sort of like I live and die by my sword. Okay. So when I left there, I haven't had another company give me paycheck in 2 decades.
Yeah.
So it's a different world. And once you get into it, then it's just hard to go back to getting paychecks, essentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But did you ever struggle with, because I think there's a flip side to that, and I can relate to it, the freedom of kind of living and dying on your ideas and what's kind of in your head. But then there's also, you know, there also can be fear, and sometimes it's challenging given the fact that you aren't getting, at least at the beginning, a stable paycheck, or you've got to sort things out and kind of everything falls on you on whether that succeeds or doesn't, right? So did you have any of that, or how did you manage the mind during those times?
A lot of fear. So, and again, this now a part of your audience who have experienced entrepreneurship, a lot of fears, dark days. I've developed a lot of mental techniques to deal with it.
Mm, tell us.
Yeah. So I mean, one thing I tell you, different people have different amount of propensity to being impacted by fear. So in general, I didn't have a lot of, it's a personality trait. I like thrills, and I used to love riding motorcycles, for example. And, you know, like those kind of things always excite me. So I am a little bit comfortable, I think, just personality wise with fear. But one thing I learned on how to deal with it. One of them is, I think of it as useful emotions. So most people think they are the most productive when they're happy, comfortable, satisfied. One thing I learned is that like any other human, when you're dealing with a complex environment, like building a company, you go through the full range of emotions that includes happiness, satisfaction, comfort, but also anger and sorrow and fear. Mm. And all these things. What I learned is that actually the most useful emotions, in the sense that they make me go make a big change, okay, are actually not happiness. And I would argue that probably all entrepreneurs made the most impactful decisions that they made, not from a place of satisfaction or happiness, but from the position of fear and anger and sorrow, okay? So the moment you learn that, okay, I am experiencing this emotion, I can swim in it for days, or I can allow myself to be sad, unhappy, even angry. Anger is like I always say, and people say that's a bad thing to say. I'm like, no. In fact, anger is probably the most potent emotion you can feel, okay? And it's just a matter of how you deal with it. So if you channel it into a change, okay, it is the most potent emotion. If you don't channel it into change and you kind of like swim in it, okay, then it's destructive. So I want to say like those nights where you feel like it's over, which happened numerous times. I can give you so many examples, the moments in my life where I said, okay, this is over. Fortunately, I sort of learned how to direct those into action, and I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you're making that distinction, because I feel like it's dangerous to make decisions on any of the extremes of whether, if you're in this really happy state, then you're sometimes, you know, it's I want to say you're almost a little bit delusional in maybe the success of what's going on. And also I think is true when you're in a massive fear state and in that like survival mode thinking, you know, it's hard to think clearly there. But I think it sounds like what I'm hearing you're saying is that when you're acknowledging you're in that space, but it sounds like you've got some tools. Exactly. And you've got some tools and practices to, it's not making like irrational decisions based on, you know, massive amounts of fear, but okay, hold on a second. You're able to channel it in a way that it sounds like you're still making clear decisions, but it's the fear that's triggering, I guess, the thought process.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much of it works for other people. These are all mental practices I have.
Yeah. Let's hear them though. People are primed on this show for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about anger specifically. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're angry because something unfair happened to your business or you or something, like, or the market doesn't, also anger of market not wanting, customer not wanting your product. Okay?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So allow yourself to be in that state for a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean an hour, 2 hours, even the whole day. But then before you sleep, I like priming my brain before I sleep. I think about, okay, what can I do about it? And essentially what happens is that time reduces the paralysis that comes from a negative emotion, but it gives you permission. It's as if you need permission from yourself to make a change, okay? So the next morning when you wake up and you're taking a shower, that's when I know, okay, that the customer didn't sign up the contract. It's a customer product you blasted it. Nobody signed up. You're like, okay, so, and you spent like months building the product, your team, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Or something that happens externally to your company. You wake up in the morning and you're like, okay, so what are the three things I can try today? Today. In fact, what is the one thing I can try today to see if I can turn this around? And that happens normally the day after. And another thing I do is in points of massive desperation. So desperation is another feeling. So that's anger. Like anger, you really can't harness anger immediately because it's too potent of an emotion. So you sort of give it like next day is when the change happens. But the night before, you need to kind of start pivoting your brain out of anger to a place of change.
But I like that you're still feeling it. I think that's key too, right? A lot of people just push that stuff down, right? So you're giving yourself the time to do that. It's good.
I mean, different emotions, you deal with them differently. Anger is specifically so potent, and I kind of have the tendency to become a little angry. So I sort of give it time to sort of tail off and then catch it when it's manageable and then turn it into action. Okay. Desperation. Actually, the way to deal with desperation is some sort of physical exercise, and it could be walking. And I can tell you numerous times when I really felt desperate, and all I did was, you know, I put my, like, I'm at home and I feel like I can't do, I don't know how to deal with this. There's no way out of this. And I put my phone and wallet in my pocket and I start walking. Okay. And I go like in this really long walk, 2 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah.
Random directions, kind of like literally like a lost person wandering in random directions.
And do you have music on, or are you just walking in silence?
I don't listen to music. I walk in silence. Okay. I say I'm weird on that. I don't really listen to music that much. My wife always makes fun of me because I also drive. Like when I'm driving, it's like silent in the car.
I like it.
So I just walk, and at that, I don't know what that physical movement does. I guess even if you go in history, a lot of people who did big things, they went on an actual physical journey. They went, traveled the world or something. Yeah. I sort of simulate that in a short period of time by going on a really, like I'm talking about 2-3 hours, your feet hurt and you're like.
Yeah. But a lot of them walk too, Alex. I mean, I study a lot of these leaders as well and brilliant minds especially for the next book I'm working on. And that's a consistent pattern. are these walks.
Yes, 100%. Because I don't know what it is about walking. It's not, I do physical, like intense exercise in the gym too.
Yeah.
But when you're doing physical, intense workout, your brain is focused on the task, which has its own benefits. But walks, you're like subjecting yourself to physical strain, but not so much so that your brain shuts off. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, despair.
Yeah. So do you walk until you start feeling the despair dissolving or other ideas pop?
No, other ideas come. Other ideas come. Okay. To give you an example, this very same company, the Famous Labs. So I, early 2023, I was like, I'm going to build an AI app laboratory and I'm going to start building AI apps. For the first 8 months of the company, everything we did failed. Like I'm talking about, and it doesn't happen often to me. Okay. but it was new to building AI apps. I'd built apps before, I dealt with AI before, but this new wave of AI, somehow I couldn't catch it. Okay. And I had burned through a lot of my capital. I was in a really tough place. And this is, I want to say September 2023 or October 2023, sometime around that.
Okay.
And I was in Puerto Rico and I was like, if I continue on this, we will be dead. Not physically, but the company will be dead. So I started literally walking on the beach in Puerto Rico. You can walk around the beach on the island. And I went, I went like for hours. It was like 3 p.m. And I started walking. There were like stray dogs running around. I didn't even know where I was. So around 7 p.m., I sort of like 3-4 hours of walking, and on the beach, your feet become tired and sweaty and mosquitoes, like stuff like that. Especially when the sun goes down, there are a lot of mosquitoes. And at that, it hit me that, okay, so I got to come back. And in the meantime, actually the idea for our first hit product, which was Deal.ai, came during that walk. Which is, look, why am I not trying the very thing I'm good at, which is I'm really good at user acquisition and marketing. I have now 9-8 months of building AI apps under my belt. My team is like primed. They can build these things quickly. Why don't I create an AI marketing technology platform? And that's what actually the first product that got action. And then I literally, I was so far out that I walked a little bit back. I'm like, I'm going to take an Uber, go back.
Yeah.
And I went back, and that 4 a.m. that night, we built the sort of the basics of it, like just the presentation. I looked at it. The next morning, I called our engineers and said, hey, guys, we are pivoting into this. And we pivoted, and the rest, that was our first product. So it's like a long walk with a moment of clarity, okay?
Yeah.
That came in a moment of absolute despair, okay? And it turned out to be our first win. And I have examples in this in my first successful company. Also, it wasn't like we had traction, but we were stuck. It's like, this is like, yeah. So it just happens. I don't know what's up with walking and being lost.
Yeah.
That actually triggers that in your brain.
Well, if all our ancestors and a lot of the people that we study and read about are doing it, I think it's good enough for us as well. And clearly you're describing those scenarios, right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, the alternative and where I think most of the population kind of defaults to is you just try to push through a situation.
Yes.
And right. Excuse me. And that's kind of what feels like the intuitive, but like what is expected in a way. And that doesn't often work, like to your point, right? You've got to take a pause and be in that emotion and then essentially like walk it off, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Moment of clarity. I want to say pretty much, even if you look at prophets, they walked and they had a moment of clarity. If you had so it's like, you read it in ancient history too. It's like you got to climb a mountain or like do something like that. And eventually like the moment of clarity comes to you. And by the way, I am not like a big hiker even. So it's like, I'm not that much.
You are by default.
Yeah. It's like, but when that happens, you got to do, is there something happens in your physiological? It's because brain is not just a brain. It's not just a thought. It's connected to your body. So you got to put yourself in that moment. And I don't know, it's just a good technique. And I have like ways to deal with also like sorrow and pity. So all of this, like I know how to delete thoughts.
Mm. Give us one more. Let's do one more, then we'll move on. But the deleting of thoughts, because
yeah,
I mean, I can speak to that from experience. There are a lot of thoughts running in this mind that
yeah.
if it wasn't for the mental fitness practices I've got, gosh, I'd be in a really dark place. So
yeah.
I'm curious to see, yeah, what's worked for you?
Yeah, this is a tool that I had since I was a teenager, and I even I've given it to my team, and my team actually mentions it. It's like, that's how much I've talked about it over the years. So let's say you have a thought that you want to delete. You're like, okay, this thing is circulating in my brain, and there's nothing to learn about it, or the thing I needed to learn about it, I already learned. Okay. So I need to delete this, because otherwise I become incompetent. Like, I can't get my job done. So
yeah,
the way I do it is that I don't try to delete it immediately. I say, okay, it's a thought, I'm going to come back to it. And then the mental model that I have is that I imagine in my brain, I put the thought, you know how you have leftover food and you put it inside an aluminum foil and put it in the fridge? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put it, wrap it inside an aluminum foil, and I'm going to put it in the back of my brain. And I'm going to later on come and open it, untangle it, and deal with it. Okay. And essentially what happens is I put it inside an aluminum foil and in my brain, mental model, pack it in the back. I don't know why it is back on my brain, but I say, okay, I'm going to store it in the back of my brain. It is there. I'm not trying to actively delete it, because the moment you try to actively delete it, it's like it just comes back. So it's like it's a futile exercise. I'm like, how about I just store it in an aluminum foil in the back of my brain, and I come back to it, you know, next week, 2 days from now, whatever. And essentially what happens is, just like leftover food, where most of it is not eaten. So it kind of like shrinks inside your aluminum foil. And when you look at it, like 2 days later, you're like, why the hell was I so obsessed with this? So just throw it out. So
I love that.
That's an aluminum foil model. Yeah. And my team even knows about it. So I'm like, you know, when we are my team, I'm like, that's so blah, 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 blah. I'm like, guys, okay, so I understand it. Let's discuss it. Let's put in an aluminum foil, put it in the back of our brain, talk about it like next week.
Yeah, then it just frees up some mental real estate, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like, it's okay. We don't have to digest this right now. We don't have to eat it. We just put it there, deal with it later. And the truth is, like, a week later, when you look at it, it's like, it's irrelevant. Or it just remains there and you never even try to ever like come back to it. It's just over time, just disappears.
Have you ever heard of the Monroe Institute?
No.
So it's a really interesting group of people that they've been doing research into consciousness for, I think, 45 years at this point, and have worked with the U.S. government as well around consciousness and meditations that kind of bring you out of body. And there's like telepathy stuff and so forth. And I've done some of their programs, and they're for the most part, they're meditations, but they all start with the principle that you're talking about, that if there's, you know, whatever is in your mind, they use, like, you know, imagine like a chest of some sort, like a treasure box. And like, you open up the lid and put the people or the things in the box and close it temporarily. But it's the same principle, right?
Like,
it's, you know, and these guys, it's, I mean, they've got wild research showing what's possible, but to get to any of those interesting states in your mind, you can't have all of that mental clutter in there, right?
No,
which is exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely not. Yeah. It's like your brain needs to be clear. And I mean, aluminum foil model, I don't know why I had it since I was literally a teenager. But you don't get a raise in job or whatever it is. Your boss is mad at you. Your whatever girlfriend breaks up with you.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. So it's just like, it's like, I can't live my life with that thought floating in my brain. So the key is, it, at least in my experience, again, I realize people's brains are different, so what I do may not work for someone else, but at least for me, I try to actively try to not think. I don't try, you know, to avoid it directly, because it is just not going to work. The emotion is too raw. So you just put inside an aluminum foil, and just like physically, I imagine it. It's like, it's just, okay, it's okay. Yeah. Wrap it up. Put inside the back of my head, and then 2 days later, I'm like, don't worry about it, brain. I'll go back to it. Yeah, it's like, I'll come back to it. It's just stored there for now.
Yeah,
and it just goes away. Yeah.
So practical. Well, thank you. Thank you for entertaining that thread. These are all super practical tools. And something, you know, this is where I want to bridge the conversation a bit, because one of the reasons I was really excited to speak with you and also bring in everything we're talking about when it comes to the mind and connecting them is that, like, you can't, especially in today's world with so much opportunity when it comes to ideation, creating things via AI and other options, but definitely in the AI space. I think if you can somewhat master your mind or have some control of the mind, then you can actually come up with some of the best ideas, and you're going to be up, you know, of course you're going to come up against hurdles and so forth, and then you're able to, you know, work through those things. So, you know, with all of that, I think it's a good bridge into maybe explain a little bit more about the first AI, because I mean, there's Famous, of course, which I know a little bit about, but Deal AI seems like that was the first one, and there's a whole bunch of products and offerings there. And is Famous a part of that?
Yes, I have a laboratory, yeah. And we launch products, and the ones that succeed.
Of course, you have a laboratory. There's a scientist in you coming, right?
Yeah, that's right. This time I'm gonna make sure it is. It's called Famous Labs. It's famouslabs.com, and we continuously launch new ideas and products. And I love doing that. Yeah.
So what's Deal AI? That's still active, right?
Yes, Deal AI. We have a few active products. The main three are Famous.ai, which we're the most well known for. Then we have supercool.com, which is essentially a all encompassing AI platform that does everything. It can create videos, music, presentations, everything. So it's essentially a tool for creators. So essentially, I have a tool for builders called Famous.ai. I have a tool for creators, which is supercool.com. And then deal.ai is a platform for marketing agencies.
Oh, so you've got the whole journey.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. So the idea here is, like, I want to make the journey of entrepreneurship. I want to remove all execution barriers with AI. So you come in with an idea, and we can get into that, highest and best use of our brain in this age. But I want idea machines, idea people to not suffer because they don't have the resources, the capital, the team, or the execution skills. So I'm trying to reduce. So this is, think about it this way. Idea people, vision people, execution people, operations people. I want to reduce the role of execution and operations and amplify people with vision to be able to still need some execution, but less of an execution. Doesn't make sense. So it's like, have AI help with that. So we as humans can upgrade our brains to the best possible use of our brain, dream up ideas, and execute with the help of the tool set that we are building.
I love it. I love it. I'm personally right in that place. I mean, I mentioned before we hit record, and it's live right now. I mean, but it's in a beta version, but I've been building a mental fitness blueprint based on the last 10 years of my work, and, you know, running people through an intake process to understand where they're at, where they want to be over the next 90 days, and start to pick up some of the mental patterns based on what's being shared. And at the end of the day, you get to the end of that around, okay, here are the practices that I've shared, that the user has shared, not my practices, but the things that, like, so for you, you know, you probably provide some information around the tinfoil kind of deletion method on thoughts and so forth, and some of the things we've talked about. But where the technology comes in is it integrates it into your routine. Mm-hmm. So it's not this thing that you're doing outside here. It's integrated with, for the next 90 days, here's what I'm working on personally and professionally, and here's what my mind needs and what I can do with these practices, as an example, based on what I know works from the work that I'm doing. So, you know, I've been able to get to kind of a V1 version of that, but where it's interesting, I'm curious to get your thoughts, is now thinking of, okay, well, to really fully automate this and to scale it out, I can see where it's breaking. And this is where I'm like, I'm not a developer. And I'm like, there's got to be something I'm missing here. How have you thought about things like that with building these kind of products?
Yeah. So I call it the last 10% problem. So
that makes sense.
So what we are doing with Famous.ai specifically is I'm building a platform where normal people with no technical abilities can build fully scalable products. That means we don't just solve the first 90% of the problem, but also the last 10% piece by piece. Now, we are not fully there, but we are more there than anybody else in the market. And my entire job is with that product is a user comes in and they want to, okay, so they turn their idea. First of all, the first thing that I really focus on Famous.ai was most people don't have a fully fleshed out idea. They just have sort of a high level idea. So the first thing I spent a lot of time on was I told my team this. I'm like, normal person comes in with an idea that is not fleshed out. They type in the first prompt. The first thing that comes out, it's not about building it completely, even though we try to build as much as we can completely, but it's essentially filling in details of your idea. So that's why our builds, like other no-code platforms, they build the first version in like 4 or 5 minutes. Ours is 12 to 16 minutes, something like that. And the reason for that is that we do a lot of work to fill in where the entrepreneur needs to be thinking about, but they didn't specify. So the first version that comes in is kind of like fills in the blanks so that your vision, all of a sudden, once you see it, okay, it gets you excited. You're like, okay, oh, this is actually what I was thinking about. Very important distinction. It's not like executing what the user said. Is executing what they said plus all the details I didn't think about. Okay.
So are you prompting the user to get to that?
No. We do the thinking on their behalf. We're like, okay, so this is what the user is explaining or wanting. Okay. What is it we extrapolate? We are like, okay, so the user, this is what they wanted. And then we build a really beautiful landing page for it. So people see even the sales pitch for their product. Does that make sense? So it's very different than, oh, I need a blah, blah, blah store, and it just gives you the scaffolding of the store. It's like, no, it injects mock data into it so you see with full information. It adds like FAQs and comes up with a hook and just like builds the whole thing full. So you're like, oh, this can be mine, okay?
Yeah.
So it kind of, that is the most important thing, because the majority of people, and myself included, when you have an idea, it is a vague, fuzzy, incomplete idea, okay? So you don't quite see it until you take the brush to the canvas, okay? And our job is to put so much in the canvas so you get excited and you continue with that project, okay? That's like the first thing. Once it is done, like you see that and you got excited about it, then the next step is to remove as much of the next step as possible. That's why, for example, if you want to integrate payment, we have payment built in. You don't have to go set up payment processor. If you want, we have CRM and backend and database built in. You don't have to do anything. The product is hosted on a fully scalable enterprise level hosting on day one. So you don't, it's not like, oh, here's a code. Now go figure out how to compile it somewhere and like figure out how to run shell commands to host it. It's like it already is fully integrated. If it needs APIs, we have API get. API means calling third-party services to, for example, add news, add stock market prices, add image generation, voice generation, if your app talks to people. So all of those, most builders that are focused around, okay, so we write the code, the user then goes grab the API. Normal people don't understand what service they need to use, how to grab the API. It's just like, so we have this concept of API gateway where we're constantly adding new services based on what we see the users need, so that AI automatically says, oh, that service I need, and we have the service already, so it just connects. It works. So that's
exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think the next step for us is e-commerce. So essentially builds a beautiful e-com front end, but then the back end, the user doesn't need to think, okay, so I need to have SKUs and variations and images and a place to upload them. None of that needs to happen. Pretty soon we will roll that out and there's going to be a back end, and you know, you don't need to think through that anymore, because a button pops up and says, this is the back end of, you ask for an e-commerce, here's a beautiful front end, but here's a back end where you can upload your products and change your coloring and stuff. And before it even does that, it does that automatically. But before it does that, it actually injects mock products into your UI. So you see, oh, that's a beautiful e-commerce store about whatever is your thing. So you see it, you get engaged
so
with
smart.
It. Yeah, so it's like, that's the idea. I'm trying to fill the last 10%. So maximize the probability of an entrepreneur with a vision to, one, get hooked. Like, it's like, okay, I'm going to commit, because that's committing to your idea is like probably the biggest issue that entrepreneurs have. They don't see it all the way through. So I'm trying to help with that by filling in details and showing them their vision fleshed out, and then solve the last 10% problem by having everything built in. And it's obviously a journey. We are probably like one third of the way there, but it's everything that other people ignore. And it's like hard work on our side too. So I'm like, it's hard, but it's worth it, because I just enabled another 1% of my users to not need this integration. And then another 0.5% don't need that integration. Doesn't make sense. So that's sort of what we're building. And it's a lot of work and it's a journey, but I am confident we can solve it, like in a way that entrepreneurs at some point don't need to figure details out. It's just like the platform.
Well, and I think just like I said, I'm in it myself as a user, and it's really refreshing to hear how you guys are thinking about this. And then also the fact that you have, okay, that you build your idea and so forth, then you have everything to continue there. Like you can create the marketing, all of that, and the content and so forth. So that in itself is super valuable. But what I've noticed, Alex, is that I think what you're really solving that no one's talking about is, you come in with the idea, and I'll just use my own example. I build what this kind of dashboard or what this landing page looks like with someone's blueprint. But then after the fact, I'm like, oh, I need to replicate this. So now I need a back end to be able to do that. And well, there's templates, and like, can I have a template? So you start asking the questions after the fact, but then you start building on what, it's like a small foundation. It's like you're building a house on like one stump or something, and it expands out and then it breaks.
Yes.
But you guys are doing everything possible to predict what that house is going to look like in the end, even though we can't see it. And I imagine avoiding some of those kind of breaking points or a lot of frustration along the way, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think of it as like, again, 90-10. The first 90% is easy. The last 10%. It's like we are like a lot of people are surprised with, we just started doing these accelerator programs where people come in person. And then within 3 days, we essentially take them end to end, meaning idea to product to marketing or first user.
Wow.
So in 3 days, and they are surprised on how much they can accomplish, because the problem is most people don't even know it's possible. So I'm like, look, it's like you just do it. Backend is built. AI knows how to build it. It's on our platform. Here's your user database. This is where user data goes once they log in. You don't even need to integrate payment. You just sign up for payment on our platform. And all the stuff, you don't even need to integrate AI models into it. It already has it. So you just say, oh, I wanted to coach users through this. You know, I need the coach to talk. I need voice. I need video generation, image generation, music generation, all those things are built in. You just say, hey, I want this. And then it kind of identifies the right tooling and just connects the dots. And the platform is fully scalable. That's another thing. I didn't want to build a platform that builds a mock. And there are a lot of good platforms that are for technical people. They can go build a mock and then they can go host it somewhere and like on an AWS account or on a server or something. They can totally do that even with our platform. But I'm not building for them. I'm building for the person that says, okay, so it is, if you see it and if it works, it is scales. Okay.
Now
I can actually run marketing campaigns to this product. I can get users. It can scale to 10 million users and payments are collected. User data, it goes into the database. Things work. If I want to make a change, I command, and it's like it reconfigures the infrastructure if needed, like creates new tables in the database, changes the schema, stuff like that. It's like it's all done on one platform with English command or any language, actually. So that's sort of the big idea here. I think that's a big unlock for a lot of entrepreneurs out there. Well, so,
and just like, I feel like what a time to be alive, right, Alex?
Yes,
like, I mean,
100%.
You look at the headlines and stuff, and there's so much, and I'm not saying that some of this stuff's not going to happen, but I mean, there's a lot of it, and this is the new media, but it's just negative, you know, news around AI and fear and this and that. Whereas there's this whole other arena and this whole other environment, like what we're talking about here, where everyone's got ideas, right? Like,
yes,
and here's an opportunity to actually let an idea like that flourish and,
yes,
and talk about the mind. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than feeling and seeing the progress of something that is like a little seed in your mind. And all of a sudden it's right there in front of you. And you're thinking of things that you never even would have thought about in the beginning. You're like, holy smokes, like this is something, this is real, right?
Yes.
I think it's so energizing.
It is. And I think, I mean, again, like using the part where there's a thought, let's say you're worried you're going to lose your job. Okay. So put it inside the aluminum foil.
Exactly. Yes.
So it's like, okay, can I do something about it? What you're doing is actually what it can do about it. But a fear of losing your job, aluminum foil back on my brain. Now I have my brain empty and free and let it run.
And take a walk.
Take a walk. Exactly. And the beauty of it is, to give you an example, I mean, one thing I tell, I am pretty sure I'm right on this. If you look throughout history and look at people whose name we remember, people who made a lot of contribution to the world and whose name we remember, from Picasso to Leonardo da Vinci to Thomas Edison to today, let's say Elon Musk, okay? They were, one thing they had in common, they were idea machines, meaning the pure volume of output was high, okay? So they constantly came up and executed. Now, it was limited. That world was limited. The world of industrialists or prolific artists, inventors, was limited to people that matched their idea ability, generation ability, with execution skill. Otherwise, they would have been no different than a person that we call crazy and is homeless on the street, okay?
Yeah.
Not nothing against homeless people, but just like a person that we say, okay, this person is not serious. So, so what's the difference? The difference is, a lot of ideas match with execution, really good execution skills. If I can reduce the barrier on execution skills, more people who have a lot of good ideas, talents, gifts, they can unleash their ideas and succeed. So that's what I really want to do, because I'm like, what is the difference between Picasso or like Thomas Edison and another person who had a lot of ideas? It's just like they also could execute. Well, if I make execution easier, more people can be the next Thomas Edison. So that's sort of what drives me. And I think AI will do a superb job. Not even like, it's going to unleash a lot of inventors and creators, artists, musicians. Even people say, music is blah, blah, blah. And we super cool, generous music, really good music. And I'm like, okay, but how much of music is the creative part and how much of it is the nitty gritty? So I'm like, it's like, if AI can do that part, more people can generate awesome music or awesome art or awesome products. So it's like, that's the idea. I'm like, okay, let's upgrade humanity. Let's push them to the top of the food chain, really top of the food chain. And that's what I think we should be doing.
Well, this is where our visions align, brother. I mean, I take a different approach around just everything I'm trying to do is helping equip people with the tools so that their minds are unleashed and they can think of those ideas, right? And people aren't looping in doubt and fear and so forth. So, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing. I really think it's a win-win for everyone. As humans, we deserve, I think, to feel great more days than not. And then we think better, we have more contribution. People around us, that's infectious. So then everything that you're saying, it's the same thing. Now you're taking those ideas that are sparking and bringing them to life. And I really see it as a really positive and flourishing time. So thank you.
I appreciate you. What you're doing is very important, by the way. One of the things I'm realizing is I can build the technology to enable people, but you can't if they don't have the ability to wrangle their mind. And it's just there's nothing that software can do for you. So end of the day, it is up to us to deal with the same situation, two different brains dealing with the same situation, the one that is better fit, like you said, better equipped to deal with those situations is going to win in the long term. So, and there's nothing software can do. I can build all the software in the world, but without that human touch, ability to control our thoughts, is all useless. So thanks for what you do.
Yeah, well, here's to sticking together and doing the best we can. Thank you.